she gets cash money at the end of the day, and going to her bank can often be a problem. There's long lines, and sometimes they just ask you, where's this money coming from? Fill out this form, you know, standard intrusive stuff. Or she can go to one of these bill pay centers where she might not have as long of a line. She pays 200 pesos fee, about $4, hands them pesos, tells them what bill to pay, and they pay it. And so she's willing to pay that 200 pesos not to have to deal with her bank.
Wow.
And I hear that story all the time. To give you a sense of scale, minimum wage here is 350 pesos a day.
Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. This is a podcast all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin. I wanted to know more about the people converging on this new form of money. Why do they see value in it? What skills enable their understanding? How is it changing their lives? If you're a founder looking for funding or an investor looking to make investments, then please reach out as I develop my network in the space. Do me a favor and chuck us a 5-star rating on whichever app you're using to listen, or a like if you're watching it somewhere. As insignificant as this may seem, they help a startup project like this hugely. Lastly, if you have any questions at all, please just reach out. The easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Jake E.S. Woodhouse. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsor. Fast Bitcoins are a Bitcoin exchange who you should definitely take a look at next time you're thinking of making a Bitcoin purchase. They're a great team, which for me is always the key to due diligence, whilst their product has a ton of features useful to every Bitcoiner. Check out my episodes with Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer, to learn more about the people behind the brand. Thank you to Fast Bitcoins for sponsoring the show. Now, on to today's episode. Today, I'm speaking with Bill, part of Bitcoin Island Philippines. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey, howdy.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. This is a podcast all about Bitcoin. Unsurprisingly, it's in the name. And where I tend to start is a question that always brings different answers, but is the same question each time, which is, well, where were you and what were you doing in your life when you first heard about Bitcoin?
So like everyone, no one gets Bitcoin the first time. I think of it sort of like on the Matrix, when you have to make that jump off the building. No one ever makes it the first time, just like Neo. So I kind of think that the second time that you hear about Bitcoin is far more likely to stick. I guess I second heard about Bitcoin when I was living in the Philippines. So I'm an American. I've been living in the Philippines now for 3 years. I believe I was about 6 months into being in the Philippines. And as you know, moving money across country borders is a real pain. And I feel like I went at warp speed through all the transitions that there are. The first time I sent money to the Philippines was so that someone could meet me at the airport. I needed to send $10 from America to the Philippines. I just used Western Union, and I probably paid as much in fees as the money I sent. That's not true, but it sure felt like it. So that was my first time sending money to the Philippines. When I got here, then I learned, oh, there's this online version of remittances. I'm going to try that. But it's the same old tech with a different bow on top of it. And that was not particularly satisfying either. I would, you know, just send myself money over ATMs, but the limits here are ridiculously low so that they can charge you that fee multiple times. It was kind of okay because I've got an interesting bank that covers ATM fees the first $10 worth a year. Oh, I'm sorry, a month. So that wasn't as bad. But then I was doing some programming gig for some guys, and they're like, hey, do you accept Bitcoin? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe I do. So I looked, and I could actually sign up for an exchange here in the Philippines. And so that actually solved some problems for me. They would send me Bitcoin, and then I could transfer it to the peso balance in the dominant e-wallet here called GCash. Think PayPal, only it has kind of a point of sale aspect to it. And so I was able to get electronic money via Bitcoin, and that was working out pretty well. And of course, everyone is a genius in a bull market, which is where we were. And this Bitcoin stuff started looking really great. So that's when I fell down the rabbit hole, but it came to me purely as a utilitarian thing. And what we're doing here in the Philippines is really utilitarian more than orange pilling people. They get orange pilled later, but you get in the door with the utility.
Interesting. And I love that. Well, as entrepreneurs, you know, where is the pain point? What is the problem you're going to solve? What are the issues someone is having in day-to-day life? And I've interviewed someone who, Lord Fusatua, shout out to him if he's ever listening, from Tonga. And he described a very similar situation with remittance cash coming from places like Australia back to Tonga, and the amount of money, i.e. margin, that gets taken on the way through by people such as Western Union. At times, it's like 30, 40% of the $100 that gets sent back. And for someone like Tonga, that has a GDP of about $500 million, they could almost get an extra 30, 40% of GDP if that remittance cost didn't exist. It's a fascinating kind of business proposition that you don't need to care about what Bitcoin is. You just chop out the middleman. It's like happy days. Brilliant. I mean,
that's interesting because I've done the math. And if in the Philippines, $100 million a day comes into this country from overseas foreign workers.
Wow.
Foreign workers are the greatest export from the Philippines.
Yeah. And you meet Filipinos everywhere, all around the world. I've met Filipinos. Yeah.
And so if they used Bitcoin as rails, purely as rails, it would save about 5% of that $100 million a day. And that would translate to 1% increase in GDP. It's certainly not 30 like Tonga, but 1% would get a lot of politicians elected.
Bill, they're probably very different countries. Philippines would be much larger in terms of population. Tonga is a very small Pacific island, a different setup completely. But how interesting. And there's no doubt that when you show someone a different way of doing things is going to save them money, then immediately it's interesting because, of course, people want to keep what's theirs. Yeah. Before we dig into necessarily the use cases here too much, which we'll get back to later, you're an American. You grew up in the States. You mentioned you were in a programming gig. So how does an American programmer end up in the Philippines?
I was actually retired. I followed the path of FIRE, financial independence, retire early. I kind of dropped out of the world at 41.
Okay.
And so I did some time in Vegas, but Vegas gets old after a while. So I was like, okay, where can I go that is super cheap to live? And Philippines is always in the top three list of cheap places to go live with a high quality of life. So that's what I did. I thought I was coming here maybe for 6 months, but I forgot to leave. So...
Awesome. And Bill, the immediate question that springs to my mind is, what had you done in your life to be able to retire by the time you were 41?
So I was an engineer. I saved and invested well and didn't have kids, didn't get married.
Okay.
Those are all things that keep your expenses down. And, you know, saving something like 20, 30% of an engineering salary adds up.
Okay. And so now that you've got to the Philippines, you were looking for somewhere that's cheap to set up and to live. You've obviously stumbled across this business case that you didn't expect to find, and your retirement perhaps has been rather short-lived. So let's focus on Bitcoin Island in the Philippines and what you guys are doing there.
Okay. So I've joined with Pouch.ph. That is a Lightning wallet for Americans that think Strike in the Philippines. For Europeans, think Coin Corner in the Philippines.
Yep.
And so it's about a year and a half old company. I found it about 6-7 months into its existence.
Okay.
And the problem they were trying to solve is they wanted to make a Bitcoin community, Bitcoin Island on Boracay. So after a short talk with Ethan, the founder and CEO, he's like, well, why don't you go to Boracay? You know, I'll pay for, you know, to be there for a week and tell me what you think. I signed up my first business, I think on day two, and a few more day two and day three. And I told him, we can do this. So it went from a test trip to a let's find an apartment trip.
Wow. Wow. And you're in Boracay at the moment?
I am in Boracay right now.
Wonderful. I used to live in Singapore. I was there for 4.5 years or so from 2012 to 2016. And I had many friends that used to go to Boracay and spend time there. It's supposed to be the most beautiful, beautiful place. So this is just another reason for me to, you know, finally make the effort to get there and come and check it all out. But the thing I find compelling is this concept of, you know, digital wealth. And you don't own a cafe or a factory or a bar or any other type of physical business to store wealth any longer. You're able to do that using different technology, being Bitcoin. And so you can physically be somewhere and still generate the same type of financial returns as you could in the original place of where you were living, so to speak. So it makes so much sense, this concept of digital nomads and going to places where it's very cheap to live, but still creating the same value online. Are you meeting other people in Boracay like that? And how do you see this kind of community building program playing out? Because to my mind, at least, I'm sat in Australia at the moment. I grew up in the UK. I'm not very bullish on the EU or Australia as being places that are going to be very friendly to this kind of project. But somewhere like Boracay, which is shooting distance from Australia, actually might make a lot of sense for me and my young family. So teach us a bit about what it feels like to live there and some of the enjoyable aspects to it.
Yeah, it's great here. So it is a small island, about 10 square kilometers, to give you an idea. There's definitely a tourist district, and then there is just the locals district. There's good apartments sprinkled in around everywhere. You just have to find them. So you could easily come here as a digital nomad. About a month ago, I think we had 3 digital nomad couples. We're running a little bit dry now after the holiday season, but I expect more will find their way here. So the cost of living here, I've got an apartment, probably one of the nicer ones. I think I'm paying about $400 or $500 US a month for it.
Wow.
I think you could get by on about $1,200 US. Here, maybe a little bit more in Boracay. You know, it's a tourist island, so it can be a little bit pricier, but still the cost of living compared to lots of other places is super low.
Wow, that would be very compelling. Yep.
You've got decent internet here, and it's pretty reliable. You know, when a typhoon comes through, you might as well just chill out and have a beer because the power might go out for 6 hours or something like that. But in general, it's pretty reliable. It's actually more reliable here than what I was experiencing in the mainland, in the provinces back in the north of Manila. So it's reasonable here.
Wow. And I think the fun part about this kind of conversation is, you know, recently I've interviewed some people. So Andre Lozier, shout out to him, based in Madeira. And what's going on there is really interesting from a Bitcoin perspective. And you can start to see how these locations that might have a bit more autonomy or places further out on the curve with fewer financial services that are automatically more suited to people like Bitcoiners, because the unbanked is a huge, huge population. And you think, okay, well, these are going to start attracting people because of what they represent. So over time, I imagine that what you guys are building is going to attract more people that are interested in the subjects you're discussing. So, okay, you've set the scene very nicely in terms of what's going on there. So teach me a little more about the business case then. So Pouch sent you there for a week. Within a week, you've signed up your first merchant, so to speak. So what is it that you're actually trying to do there? And to my mind, when you said Coin Corner or Strike, it's basically a digital wallet that helps you buy Bitcoin. Pouch is the same, I guess. Why does a merchant want to use that?
Ah, okay. So when we're, quote, selling, it's free, but we're still having to sell it. When we're selling Pouch to a business here, we're doing it on utility. So they want to accept money from foreigners. Many of these businesses are not going to have Visa, MasterCard. And so how can they accept payments from foreigners? The foreigners are not going to have the dominant e-wallet here of GCash. So they're pretty much limited to a cash economy. Mm-hmm. And the biggest amount that you can generally get out of an ATM is 200 US at about a $5 fee. So, you know, people might run out of money and then just not go to that bar that they were going to go to. There's no way to pay. And they're not going to go find an ATM or anything. So having more payment options is just good business.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And so when we tell them, you know, this is an e-wallet for foreigners, they like that. I've heard from people that about 20% of their business comes from e-wallets, Filipino e-wallets. Mm. So they definitely see that it is something that is useful and that people want to use.
I could see you too, and some another shout out. So Rishi Bond over in Guatemala setting up Bitcoin Lake. So Lake yep. Atitlan in Guatemala. I had Rishi on the show as well, and he was explaining how some of the local economy there, it is a cash economy, because as you said, foreigners turn up, they don't have the right currency to interact with these stalls, and not all of them can afford to pay for Visa and MasterCard FPOS machines. They don't have any point of sale. And the cash machine is either expensive or pure and simple empty. And so it's like, it's such a kind of egregious way of doing business, isn't it? To push people into that, let's just say, like extreme niche in some senses. Like there's no point Visa and MasterCard aren't going to change their business model just to incorporate a couple of tiny traders sitting in, you know, marginal economies, so to speak.
Correct.
And so what kind of difference do you think that helping people use the Bitcoin network will have to someone like Boracay?
So we see this somewhat as a Trojan horse towards the remittances.
Mm.
Okay. Because as we'd said, there's so much money that comes in here. Getting Filipino to use and understand and be familiar with Bitcoin and Pouch by extension is going to open them up to those foreign remittances. So that's a big reason why we're doing this. For the businesses, it costs nothing to sign up. They can just start accepting. And we have an unfair advantage in this community in that Pouch, much like Strike and Coin Corner, receives Lightning, but immediately converts it to the local fiat.
Okay.
So they don't have to worry about Bitcoin or anything else. If they invoice saying, I need 1,000 pesos for this bill, someone pays it with Bitcoin, and their balance is 1,000 greater for accepting it.
Oh, wow.
So Pouch on the backside is doing that conversion. So they don't really care about exchange rate. They don't care about Bitcoin necessarily. Yeah. They just know that they can accept this magic internet money, if you will, and get paid.
This is Bitcoin, the network, functioning extremely well, right?
That yes.
Is an often overlooked kind of value proposition of what this nascent technology actually is. So in terms of raw numbers, do you have any concept that you can pass through as to, like, you know, so how many places have you signed up in the local area now? What kind of additional revenue do you think you've helped generate, and how useful is it to these merchants, and how does Pouch make money from that?
Yeah. So we have 250 businesses on the island that you can visit right now, and they will accept Lightning.
And you got there 6 months ago, you said?
Yeah, it took us 6 months to do that.
Fuck, that sounds amazing to me. Wow.
Yeah, we kind of showed up on the scene, and it took a while to get some credibility because we hadn't made any noise at all until we got 100 businesses. And people are like, what is this project? I've never heard of Bitcoin Island Philippines. Mm. And then we really hit our stride, and we got another 150 over the course of the next month. Now we've had some travel bloggers come and, you know, blog their experience. More plebs are showing up and making videos, sending photos, putting reviews and saying, oh yeah, this is real. So yeah, that's what we've been doing here as far as numbers, 250 businesses right now. I would say half of them are locals businesses and about half are tourist businesses. The average stay on Boracay is 3 days. It is entirely possible as a Bitcoiner to come and have your entire vacation only using Bitcoin. I rarely use fiat anymore. For a month or two, I was just going out of my way only to use Bitcoin, and it was entirely possible.
And so, Bill, so how friendly is the local government to this project? And, you know, things like capital gains tax exist in a number of countries. And so when you spend your Bitcoin, you have a taxable event. How friendly are the Filipino government to Bitcoin?
So right now, they've just ignored us. We haven't gotten any phone calls, any messages. And even though we're using Bitcoin, the network, for the local Filipino, they never touch or own Bitcoin technically.
Yeah.
Because us as an operator of payment systems, we see Lightning coming across the network, and then we drop it into their bank account. When they open up a pouch account, there is a white label bank here called NetBank that exists to help operator payment systems like us. They get a bank account that they interact with through our app, and we just drop that money into their account. So from a taxes perspective, there's no capital gains specifically from the Bitcoin because they never owned Bitcoin. It's very much the Strike model in that if you use Strike, send Bitcoin to someone, you never own the Bitcoin. So that's not a taxable event. Strike sent that for them.
Wow. It's a very cool concept. It's neat, isn't it? It's like, haha, come and get us type vibe. You know, what's the point contacting you when you're not breaking the rules? I love that a lot. And so, Bill, to talk about like market size for a moment. So what's happening on Boracay is a tiny microcosm of the Filipino economy. And frankly, Southeast Asia, full stop. I mean, as I mentioned, living in Singapore, I was lucky to travel all through the region. And the truth be told, a lot of these places they struggle from a financial services perspective. So how are you guys looking at growth, and what do you expect to be able to expand into, and what really gets you excited about the future in this project?
Yeah. So right now it's very labor intensive to set up businesses. Yeah. We're going out there and some self onboard, but they're pretty hardcore Bitcoiners.
Yeah.
And we're starting to feel like the goals of the island community have been reached in that tourists can come here, have a great Bitcoin vacation, and never use pesos. So we're starting to wonder if we need to move me to another island, another community, and do it all over again.
Okay.
And, you know, this is not something that necessarily scales to an entire country, but proving that the concept worked once here, once there, really starts to give us hope on that. So we're contemplating the idea of going somewhere else in the Philippines. Eventually, we need to get mass adoption where people self-onboard themselves. And so that's something that, we know is going to happen.
To do that, Bill, because that's where my brain was going just then. It's like, okay, well, physically moving someone around is not a very scalable process at all.
Right.
The business case that you've already outlined is a very strong one in terms of, you know, saving people cost on remittance. Equally, the fact that there's no necessary taxable gains because of the way the technology functions. Do you not think there's ability for good viral and organic growth of a product like this? Like other Filipinos talking to each other, explaining how they now take money from foreigners without having to pay as many fees and all the rest of it. Presumably something like this has a great potential to spread like that.
Yeah, we believe and are counting on that. So here on the island, it is a small island. I would say most of the business owners know another business owner that now accepts Bitcoin through Pouch.
Yeah.
So we were very happy. A Korean gentleman that owned 6 different businesses sought us out. We signed him up, and now he's that 6 more businesses that just went like that.
Wow.
And we hope at some point there's going to be a critical mass where that just happens a lot more. We are one of the things that we're doing to help encourage that is we've got a Bitcoin retreat at the end of March. And we're hoping, you know, 150, 250 Bitcoiners show up. Mm-hmm. And I've got plans on how to utilize that the most to encourage growth in the economy here. But when 250 of us show up, and I imagine are going to be pretty vocal about only going places that accept Bitcoin, that's something that will be noticed on the island.
Wow. It's very cool. And I find it so engaging and kind of compelling that whatever this thing Bitcoin is, you know, here we are on a call together, not met before, but, you know, reached out through Twitter and started talking, said, okay, come on the podcast. I'd love to find out about what's going on. You know, there's probably multiple other places in the world right now that are doing similar things to what's going on in Boracay. And in a totally decentralized manner, like no one's talking to each other about what they're building. So like what Rishi's done in late Bitcoin is very, very similar to what you're doing, but you guys won't have spoken.
We met in El Salvador, but
oh,
yes.
You have met. Okay, yeah. There you go. Well, there's a connection for you, but does that mean my point is completely wrong? Perhaps it does. You already know each other. But where I was trying to go with that is there's all of these projects going on at the same time without a huge amount of cross coordination. Mm-hmm. And that's incredible, isn't it? And you mentioned only 2.5 years ago you came across Bitcoin. So how does it feel to have gone on this, like, it feels, I can feel it from you, like whirlwind journey in just a couple of years. Where's it taking you, Bill?
So I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't pick up Bitcoin the first time. I should have made that jump. I was a hardcore libertarian with hard money Austrian economic ideas. And why I didn't get it the first time is... it still stupefies me. I suspect it's because I first heard about it in a bull market. Yep. And I think that was actually a bad time to learn about it because I would be playing poker and there's all these gambler types that clearly do not understand the technology. And they're checking their phones every 10 seconds and saying, hey, it's up $10. Oh, it's up 10,000, you know, whatever. And I look at this and I'm like, clearly these people are idiots. And to be fair, they were all day traders, probably doing a bunch of other shit coins too. But when I saw that euphoria, I'm like, whatever. So I just kind of wrote it off.
When was that, Bill?
That was at not this bull market, but the one before.
So 2017-ish roughly.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because often it's people who had a background in libertarianism and hard money that see Bitcoin from that perspective first. But actually, it's more the use case. It's the business case you stumbled across that really caught your attention.
Yeah.
Can you teach me then? So what does it mean to be libertarian? And to talk about hard money for a moment, your previous interest in that, where did that come from and why was that important to you?
I think I was always a libertarian. I just didn't know there was a word for it until I picked up Peter McWilliams' book, Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do, The Absurdity of Consensual Crimes in Our Free Country. I don't know if you've ever read that. It's the big orange book.
No. I'm so he has remind me the name. Sorry, Bill.
Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do. And Peter McWilliams wrote that. I got turned on to it, and someone actually mailed it to me when I was living in Finland. So that paper book made it across the ocean to me from a friend in America. And I devoured it. And I was like, yeah. Now, Peter was focusing almost entirely on the social aspects of libertarianism. Mm-hmm. And everything he was saying made total sense to me. So once I got back to America where there were English language bookstores, I fell down the libertarian rabbit hole. I was part of the Libertarian Party of America and the whole thing. And it just all made total sense to me.
And sorry, Bill, so to someone out there that doesn't necessarily know what libertarian means,
could you summarize, just on a very simple level,
what does it mean to you to affiliate with being a libertarian?
So libertarians believe in the non-aggression principle, meaning that they are not going to initiate violence for the purpose of philosophical or political beliefs. And from that one principle, basically every libertarian falls from that one principle. So just like there's rules of the network of Bitcoin, that one rule of non-initiation of force, almost everything can fall from that in libertarianism. Basically, it says, if you ain't hurting anyone, do what you want.
Mm. Okay, cool.
And so
I was going to go with that next, which is really interesting, because you mentioned hard money. So how does, is there a connection between your previous stance as a libertarian or your current stance as a libertarian and the information that you gained from that process Because yes, you came to Bitcoin from a utilitarian perspective and the business case that you mentioned with remittance, but you had this background knowledge of hard money and libertarianism. So did they gel at some point and help you realize, oh, this really is something I must take notice of? Or it just happens to be that, you know, they were both there?
Oh, no, having the philosophical underpinnings already long believed for decades really, really helped.
Okay.
You know, I see people first discovering Austrian economics when they get into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, I learned this. Well, I already knew that. I already believed that. So seeing that this was a practical application of all those ideas was very clear to me once I understood it. And I have a tech background. The first book I ever bought on Amazon was Bruce Schneier's Applied Cryptography. So the Big Red book, I read it recreationally. Wow. So yeah, I definitely had all the pieces lined up for this.
And that's actually something that I find is a bit of a recurring theme in a nice way, in that there's a load of touch points that people have had in their life. So you knew a bit about cryptography, you knew a bit about libertarianism and hard money, and then you came across a business case that really made sense. You're like, holy shit, this is like a triple whammy. Let's have a go. Because you might, like, let's say the business case was the first thing you stumbled across and you didn't have that background knowledge. You probably wouldn't be sitting in Boracay 6 months into signing up 250 businesses to use this new network. And that's what I see happening a lot, actually, is we're all lucky to have had certain experiences in our lives that all seem to kind of gel at the same point. You go, ah, right. And yes, there'll be something missing in your skill set or knowledge base that you pick up because of Bitcoin. So for me, Austrian economics is relatively new, even though I did study economics before, but it certainly wasn't Austrian economics. And there's so much truth that comes through. You're like, oh, this actually makes sense. Like, none of the economics I'd studied before really did at all, which is fascinating. What I like about the statement you made earlier is that the adoption rate of Pouch and what you're seeing in the Philippines has got nothing to do with this more philosophical side of Bitcoin or how it's designed. It's purely a use case. And that's very, very exciting. Okay, Bill, so do you think you will get sent to a different part of the Philippines to help grow this out? Or what do you think might happen over the next year or so?
Nothing's ever set with a startup, but I expect to be here on the island at least until the end of March when we have our retreat. Mm-hmm. And then that's when we'll decide, are we moving somewhere else? Am I moving somewhere else in the Philippines to do it all over again? Is there more to be done here? So we'll make that decision. I've told Ethan, the CEO, you know, I don't particularly want to live in a big city, but it is part of what we need to do. And to me, the mission is the most important thing. And yeah, I'll go live in Manila for however long it takes to get that going.
And so you've obviously joined the business Pouch. Did you get involved as an investor perhaps, or get onto the cap table, and how are things working from that perspective?
I am technically an employee. So.
Okay, cool. And so through this process, have you guys seen much other innovation happening in the Philippines or Southeast Asia for that matter when it comes to Bitcoin?
So have we seen other companies that we're working with?
Yeah. Or just Bitcoin in general, like
I'm not sure the NDA status of non-disclosure agreements of these. And so I don't want to overstep here. Yep. But yes, there are other businesses in the Philippines that are interested in Bitcoin.
Okay. For Americans that have never been to the Philippines, how would you compare life in the Philippines versus life in America?
Way slower. Very chilled and relaxed. All the things that make the Philippines a great place to live can make it kind of a pain to do business. I don't know if you've ever heard the term Filipino time.
No.
Okay. If you come here, you will understand what it is. Filipino are not very clock driven. So that's challenging. Oh, when do you want to get together? Later. When? Tomorrow. What time? Afternoon. When? Oh, 1 o'clock. Yeah, you have to keep probing for that, because it's just not something that people think about. Oh, we'll see you later. But living here, everything is just super relaxed. The Filipino are so friendly. I am not kidding you when I say they are singing in the streets.
Wow.
It doesn't even surprise me anymore. You're walking down and someone is singing. That is just so part of the culture here. People just sing. They're very friendly, happy, happy people. And so it is a great place to live.
What have some of the biggest challenges been? So, you've already mentioned you lived in Finland as well. So have you lived a fairly nomadic lifestyle for a while? Or was it a case of like really, you know, you had to up sticks and go and change things up? And through that process, like what have some of the biggest challenges been?
Okay, so yeah, I've lived in Finland, several places in the States, and now the Philippines. So I've had a few different places that I've lived over the years. I don't really like the idea of moving somewhere every month. I think that would be kind of bad. But going and living somewhere for a year or something seems far more appealing to me. So the biggest challenge by far to signing up a business is finding the person that can say yes. So the bigger the business, the harder it is to sign up. You know, if you go to one of the tiny little convenience stores, they call them sari-saris here.
Yeah.
They are everywhere. You cannot stand anywhere in the Philippines where you are not within sight of a sari-sari store. They are tiny little dry goods stores, maybe some vegetables, whatever they feel like selling. If we want to sign up one of those, usually the owner is right there or a family member is, and you can find them, talk to them, and they can sign up on the spot. That is pretty easy and a very important part of the locals' economy. Most tourists here will probably maybe go to one or two sari-saris just because they want a soda while they're walking by. But for a lot of people, it is the local grocery store for a lot of items. So when you get to, you know, more of a Western restaurant, the owner might be there, they might not. And so you can walk to 10 restaurants and not find a single owner that can help you that day.
Wow.
Once you find them and we've got our pitch pretty well refined, the answer is very often yes. But getting that meeting with that person can be very, very difficult.
It's interesting because that's essentially the same problem as every single startup in the world. You know, you've got this customer in theory, you got to go find them, and then you got to find the actual gatekeeper within that organization. And that's the tough part. I assume this comes back to what we were talking about earlier about virality. So yeah, I mean, maybe you need a team of Filipinos out there hustling and finding people to sign up. One thing you didn't answer actually was, so how does Pouch make money out of this?
So we don't charge any fees on the transactions, but what we do is we have about a 1% spread on the exchange rate. So let's say you are making a Lightning invoice with Pouch. If Pouch reads that Lightning invoice, it reads it and says, hey, that's one of mine. I know that. So I'm just going to do a database swap because it's Pouch to Pouch. There's no need to go over the Lightning network at all. Now, if you're requesting 100 pesos in Pouch, the Lightning invoice that is created is for 101 pesos in sats. So that's where that 1% comes in. They say they're receiving 100, but the equivalent in satoshis is 101. For us, 100 for them. So for the business owner, what they invoice is what they keep. They don't worry about exchange rates or anything else.
The customer pays.
And then the foreign, because very often it's going to be a foreigner that doesn't have pouches paying with Bitcoin, they don't really care about that 1% spread when they compare it to how much is the spread on your Visa card? How much does it cost you to go to the ATM to get cash?
Yeah.
So it's a win for both sides.
Yeah. I mean, you said it was about $5 on $200 earlier at the ATM. So that's, you know, already three times the cost. And I imagine they're also taking a spread as well. So God knows what that is on top. Interesting. And so then, you know, scale that up. If you guys were to do $100 million worth of transactions, you've got $1 million business.
Yeah.
I assume is how you're looking at it. Wow. And that's not even then thinking about what kind of like ancillary products you could build into that. I mean, that's what's so extraordinary, isn't it? The tip of the iceberg might be the business case you're solving now. And I guess that leads me on nicely to ask you. So let's say this is product number one. What else has cropped up that you think you could help people with?
Yeah, so being unbanked in the Philippines is very common and a real pain in the neck. And one of the problems that they have is paying utility bills.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working to get that built into Pouch right now. So there's an API and a service provider that we can interact with that soon inside your Pouch app, you could just say, okay, I need to pay my utilities. I need to pay Auckland Water. Here's my account number. Here's the amount I want to send. And it just comes right out of your Pouch account.
Wow.
So I do that right now for the utility bills that I pay here. It gets to be a little philosophical. Am I using Bitcoin? Well, my Pouch account was funded with Bitcoin and it's sending out to a utility bill, but the peso balance in my Pouch was pesos. Yeah. So it gets to be a little bit philosophical there, but I pay all my utility bills there. I was talking with a lady that this is a real sad story. I'll just get to the part of it that's relevant here, but she has to pay her water bill. She is banked in the Philippines, but you know, she's a business owner. She gets cash money at the end of the day, and going to her bank can often be a problem. There's long lines, and sometimes they just ask you, where's this money coming from? Fill out this form, you know, standard intrusive stuff. Mm-hmm. Or she can go to one of these bill pay centers where she might not have as long of a line. She pays 200 pesos fee, about $4. Hands them pesos, tells them what bill to pay, and they pay it. And so she's willing to pay that 200 pesos not to have to deal with her bank.
Wow.
And I hear that story all the time. To give you a sense of scale, minimum wage here is 350 pesos a day. So how much does she hate interacting with her bank?
Fuck.
Yeah. So that can be how dysfunctional it is. Now, if she's accepting Pouch and she's gotten enough money in her Pouch account, then she could just say, oh, pay my utility bill. And she's doing essentially the same thing that that bill pay service is doing, only she's doing it herself.
Yeah, that's a brilliant story. I love hearing about these kind of things. You mentioned the unbanked. So what does that represent in the Philippines and why does that exist?
It's about 60% of adults are unbanked in the Philippines.
Fucking hell. That's crazy.
So it is a big opportunity.
And so how do those people trade every day?
It's a cash economy, and a lot of them use that dominant e-wallet GCash. They're doing a lot of the same things that we are doing, where they've got the bill pay a friend, things like that. So they're doing a lot of the things that we're doing because there is a market need for that.
And so GCash is another crypto wallet, is it?
It is not crypto. It is purely a fiat-based system. Think of it as PayPal.
Okay. So people are able to open GCash accounts rather than bank accounts.
Yeah. I was finally able to get one. I was very persistent as a foreigner. And after 6 months, you get a foreign ID, alien resident. I don't even know what the hell they call it. And with that, I was able to open a GCash account.
Right.
So as a tourist for a week, you're never going to open one of these. It took me a lot of persistence and six months until I got that card.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what intrigues me then is this definition of the unbanked. So 60% of Filipinos are unbanked, but of that percentage, how many do you think have a GCash account? And so, and also equally, like, what's the smartphone penetration rates? This is the thing that always blows my mind. I mean, like, most people have a mobile phone, right?
Yes. Most people have a mobile phone. Mm-hmm. I don't know the penetration of GCash, but I would say it is large. It is very large. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was higher penetration than the banking system.
Okay.
So
interesting. So GCash is kind of functioning as a shadow banking marketplace, shall we say.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So you end up with these kind of quasi banks that have popped up that are filling that gap that help people trade day to day, whether they're getting paid in wages or they're actually buying stuff in the local market, etc. Wow. How cool. And so you must see a huge opportunity then as entrepreneurs to help build Pouch, right? So 5 years from now, like, what do you feel like the user base is today? Are you able to share any numbers? And where might you expect to be in the future, do you think?
So I think we're at about 10,000 users.
Okay. Congratulations. You know,
these are opened accounts. That's just rough numbers, but yeah. So we're about there. I know that when people hear about it, they sign up. Mm-hmm. And we are not truly ready for prime time yet, in that one of the most important things here is having rails to these, they call them pawn shops, but basically they're very local remittance centers. So like right now I can send my Pouch money to any bank, but it's hard to find somewhere where I can send it to pick up cash.
Right.
And so when we finally broker some deals with them, then I think it's a lot better, because they would then be able to get the pesos that they need. Being able to go out to GCash is great and very, very useful. And Filipino are much more informal about things. So as long as they have a friend with a bank account, they can just send it to their friend's bank and know they can pick up the pesos through them. So that is super common, to be sharing your bank account with a friend, a sister, whatever. Where are we? I mean, these things grow exponentially. So 100,000 users in the next couple of years does not seem unreasonable to me at all. And as we are developing these relationships, like Coin Corner, it exists right now. If Coin Corner is sort of the strike and pouch of the EU, and so you can hook up your EU bank account with Coin Corner and send out Lightning payments. Mm-hmm. Well, we always want to simplify the experience. So now in Coin Corner, you can say send globally and a list will pop up. Philippines is one of them. And then you put it, what happens behind the scenes is they contact us. We tell them, okay, here is a list of places to send in the Philippines. Like, we list all the banks, the GCash, the PayMaya, anything that we support. So as we support more things by proxy, Coin Corner does too.
Wow.
They pick where they want to send it, and they quickly buy Bitcoin, send it over Lightning to us. We quickly sell it and then pop it into whatever they wanted to do. And no one on the receive side needs to know what Pouch is. They don't need to do anything. It just shows up in the bank account, the Palawan, pawn shop, whatever it is. So Coin Corner is very generous. They flash up our logo, but we are pretty invisible in this process, and that's fine by us. Yeah. So even if we don't necessarily get as many users as we want, we will be used. And so we're still solving the problem.
What's the population of the Philippines?
I'm going to have to Google that. That's something I should know. Hold on. It's large, though. 113 mil. Yeah,
100 mil plus. I mean, it's just a massive market, absolutely a massive market. And when you think about, so that's 100 million domestic Filipinos with God knows how many globally that send back, as you said, 100 million a day.
A day.
Fuck. That's a massive market to be going after. And it's particularly interesting that it can be done, you know, as startup entrepreneurs. Is it 10x faster? Is it 10x cheaper? Is it 10x better in some way? And I think it's pretty clear.
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know, people prefer using this process, right? It's very, very exciting. How cool.
We're really excited to tap into that viralness. So Filipino nurses are all over the world.
Okay.
Due to some heritage with the US being over here and setting up nursing schools, there is just a huge percentage. I think like 30% of all nurses in America are Filipino.
No way. Interesting.
So I think that's fairly true just around the world, but especially in America. So I'm envisioning getting some nurses in America to understand the process and start sending the money to their families this way. Mm-hmm. Nurses are going to have some money. They're probably going to have a bank account. So then they can, like today, open a Strike account, send it to Pouch. Their cousin, their aunt, their sister, whatever, can get that money instantly. I mean, that's how I remit to myself. All the money I send to myself comes from my bank account through Strike to Pouch, and I use it just directly as Bitcoin here.
Wow. When you explain it like that, first and foremost, I like the idea of thinking about a specific avatar. So who's your target customer? It's like, okay, well, we know that there's a community of Filipinos in a certain part of the world. We can actually be very clear as to who those people are, their nurses. And we know they're going to have a little bit of money that's coming back to the Philippines. How can we get involved in that community? And I imagine there's all sorts of Facebook groups for Filipino nurses or something like this, where it's easy enough to find these kind of characters and say, guys, we've got a cheaper way of you sending money home. Are you interested? And they'll be like, absolutely, we're interested. And before you know it, you've got a subset of what could be a much, much larger market that start using your product. And that's how things pick up, right? I can see you smiling. Go for it, Bill. Go on.
I'm excited about the nurses because there's something called the traveling nurse program. Uh-huh. And so if we have patient zero in a hospital and she teaches or he teaches all of the other Filipino, hey, this is better. And then they are in a traveling nurse program, rinse and repeat. How long does it take to get that knowledge to all the Filipino nurses in America? Yeah. And it's so clearly superior that I don't think that takes very long at all. Mm. And the other thing that was making me smile, you said, okay, you've got an avatar of your user. One of the first things I did, because I have a usability background from my software experience, was I made profiles of 10 users of Pouch in the Philippines.
Okay.
And so I went to AI face generator. I generated them faces. I gave them names. I gave them backgrounds. And it made us all laugh because they were very true. Like one of them that's turned out to be incredibly true was the person that you're going to be selling to is the 10-year-old kid, because that's the one that speaks English at this store.
Wow.
Right. I have absolutely pitched to 10-year-old kids that could then explain it to their parents.
Wow. I love that. That's proper, like, out there hustling. So Pouch is a company that's in a country, the Philippines, 100 or so million people. And what you're doing is you're creating the rails for all the local services that people use and might want to use, whether that be a bank account or GCash or the utilities structure that you mentioned. And so I'm imagining then that actually similar companies will pop up in all of these different nation state, like domestic markets. And there'll be some way of connecting together all of them. So Coin Corner's in the UK, connected into the EU, Strike's in the US, predominantly there. There'll be other companies here in Australia and other parts of the world that, you know, Japan, for example, huge population, India, massive. And you'll be able to create this network, obviously built on the Bitcoin network in some way, that connects all of them together. Isn't that a crazy concept? I mean, I had
that is exactly before, that is exactly what we are going after. It's funny you mentioned Australia and New Zealand. You didn't say New Zealand, but Australia, New Zealand, we've got friends there. It's bitforge.me.
Okay.
They are developing what we already have only for that market.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So they're still up and coming, but I've seen their tech. I've talked with them. I've had a beer with them here. And what I see is there's already an existing API. I don't know if you know this, but Strike has an API that connects Strike with three African countries.
Okay.
So in Strike, you say send globally. And for them, all they need is the phone number. And they say the phone number in Kenya. And then they talk to Bitnob and get all the information. I just did this last night as a demo. I don't know if you've heard of the people that are doing Lightning over SMS.
Yeah, I've heard about this project. I haven't yet contacted them, though. I'd like to speak to them.
Oh, yeah. Well, they will be at our retreat. I was just talking with them last night, and I'm like, I've never done this. I want to do it. So I got her phone number. I went to Strike, put it in, and I sent $5 to Kenya. She sent me the screenshot a few seconds later. It cost me 11 cents.
Holy shit.
And for those that are
listening that haven't seen this before, so one of the prerequisites one often says about Bitcoin is you need an internet connection and a smartphone. But actually, people are starting to send Bitcoin to each other using cell networks and SMS. So it's like a whole nother market of people that actually don't have smartphones and aren't necessarily on 3G, 4G, 5G connectivity. Well, yeah.
Their demo is incredible.
I'll have to find them because that's also another market that, you know, not everyone's going to have the money to have their own self-custodied Bitcoin. And there's a load of different barriers to entry to people that are, you know, frankly, making very, very little money compared to someone like myself, who is, you know, growing up in the UK and living in Australia, but different type of money altogether. Well, that's something else I'll explore. I'll try and get them on the show at some point. Well, Bill, listen, that's about all we've got time for today. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing all this with me. I love talking through the business case of Bitcoin because it really echoes so much about the entrepreneurial spirit that's going on, and what's been built on top of it is just another layer of value. Now, that's putting aside the philosophy of hard money and Austrian economics and libertarianism that goes with it, which is a really fascinating subject as well. So just to wrap things up, any closing comments, and where can people get in touch if they're interested?
So I would love to greet any Bitcoin visitor to the island. And if you go to pouch.ph across the menu bar, one of the entries is Boracay. That's Bitcoin Island. I've got all the information about getting here, getting on the island. I hope to greet everyone that comes here. But the other one that's more timely is we are having a retreat. It's sort of like a convention, but it's patterned after Foo Camp, the unconference, if you will. We believe that most conferences, the most important part happens out in the hallways when people are talking to each other. Yep. So we've got a variety of activities that are fostering that kind of interaction. If you go there to pouch.ph, retreat is one of them, and go look at the schedule, the kinds of events that we're doing, and you're going to find something much different. And everyone I've explained it to is like, yeah, that's going to work. So
awesome. Please
come.
And on Twitter, you guys are Bitcoin Philippines Island.
Twitter, we are Bitcoin Island PH.
PH. Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much for your time today, Bill. Really appreciate your stories. Love it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, friends. Nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.